You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. We know the world around us is changing at a rapid rate right now, and from Peter Sheehan a couple of weeks ago, we learned that if the rate of change outside of our businesses is greater than the rate of change inside of our businesses, then we'd kind of better watch out. Last week, we learned from Chris Hanley that changing your language can make all of the difference to all of your transaction stakeholders right now, given the current market conditions. But we also know that change can be very difficult, so it's no surprise that one of the hallmarks of top performers, not just in real estate, but in many of life's endeavours, are those that are able to handle change and the challenges it brings better than others. In the May issue of Elite Agent, you may have caught an article about how Roger Federer had to change his game completely to remain competitive on the world stage. And this is a pretty good metaphor for staying on top in many industries, including real estate. So, my podcast guest this week is the author of that article and sales psychologist, Pantro Mehrotra. And in this podcast, we unpack why change is hard for some people and what to do about it, as well as recognizing when you absolutely need to change, whether it's a small change in your language or a big transformative change that everyone possibly needs every once in a while.
So welcome, Pancho.
Hi, thank you.
So Pancho, just for the listeners at home, tell us a little bit about the sort of work that you do in and outside of the real estate industry.
I tend to work in the area of helping people understand themselves, from their emotional intelligence to actually understanding people, what makes people tick, how you can actually figure out the people that you sell to, and to have better relationships with these people so you can influence their thinking to go ahead with you. A lot of the work I also revolves around actually understanding what's going on inside your head. I tend to teach people when the course is called People Who Read People. So one of the key things we always have a heavy emphasis on is how well do you actually read yourself? And we find a lot of people struggle to actually understand themselves, the emotions that they go through, especially when things aren't going well. And sometimes the reactions to things that aren't going well aren't probably the right strategies to take. Selling is, to a certain extent, a very emotional game. Mm. And what we often find is that the top performers handle, say, challenges or adversity better than the other people. And they don't sort of buy into the emotion as much. And they have ability to move on very, very quickly. And that is a learned behavior to a certain extent. Can you teach it? Yes, you can. Can anyone be good at it? It depends on how much you work at it for.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you contributed an article to the magazine drawing on the example of Australian Open winner Roger Federer, yeah, who we know is a fantastic tennis player, and what it takes to change. And just in the context of, you know, transform recently, because you're a transform coach as well, and we did deal with the what does it really take to change. Yeah. So if you're stuck at the moment, your results aren't quite what you want them to be, first of all, let's deal with what usually motivates people to make a change?
Usually some form of pain or discontent.
Yeah.
Very rarely have I found someone say, oh, yeah, let's do it. There are a few exceptions to that rule, of course.
Because change is hard, right?
Yes. And if we look at how the brain works, the brain is designed to go into habit formation. Whether it's good habits or bad habits, it doesn't really, really matter to it. It's not designed to work hard. That's why sometimes you can go into a training course and you come out and you go, my brain hurts.
It literally does.
it does hurt, yeah, because you haven't used it to learn. And learning is a skill. And it's a skill that requires quite a lot of effort. It, as they say, requires a lot of brain power, because slipping into bad habits is so, so easy. We're hardwired for this. And the people that can go to the top have this awareness that what they're doing is not working.
Yeah. So we can go along in life thinking everything's okay and I'm okay the way I am until we get to a point where the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same.
Yeah. And often people change, or change is forced upon them due to circumstances. Mm. whether it's health, finance, or career. And if we talk about health, I've had several clients, not in the real estate industry, who have had multiple heart attacks. And they're smokers.
Forces you to change pretty quickly.
Well, it's interesting. I've had two clients who I have known for a long period of time. He's had five multiple heart attacks from smoking, and yet he won't stop smoking.
Wow.
And I just really sat down with him and said, this is just not enough for you, is it? And he says, no. Nah. He says, I enjoy smoking too much to give it up. And
so he'd rather have another heart attack than give up smoking.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, so that is how hard change can be for some people.
Yeah. And if you looked at his motivation, I put a bit of pressure on him. And I said, okay, so obviously your health is not such an important issue to you. What is? And he said, my financial health is more important. And so I just turned the conversation around to finance. And then he made a decision to change. Yeah. And it wasn't based on his health, whether he was going to die. So it's all relative to what is really, really important to that person. I wrote that article because people often think that you can make change quite rapidly. Well, the precursor to change is actually taking some time out and reflecting. If you're in a hospital, you've got some reflection time in a hospital bed.
You've got no choice,
you've
right?
You've got no choice.
But tell us Roger's story. Tell us why you were inspired to write about Roger Federer.
So he was going along in his career. He was, as they say in tennis terms, getting on a bit. He was 35 and a half years old, and he had to take 6 months out of the game due to a knee injury, not related to tennis, but that 6 months forced him to actually reflect on his playing career. Now, he has categorically stated that he wants to continue playing as long as possible. So he's motivated there. So there's no drop of motivation.
Yeah.
But he also recognized that in order for him to carry on to the level that he wants to carry on, where he can compete and win, is he had to change his strategy. And for many, many years, he's had the best coaches in the world. I'm telling you, the best coaches.
Yeah.
Telling him to do what he should have done nearly 10 years ago. And it's just when you think about the changes he's made, they've been quite phenomenal. No one has ever done what he's done. But he had 6 months out of the game. He had to change his strategy. He had to shorten his points because he's 36, 37 years old. He can't keep up long rallies with his opponents.
The younger players.
The younger players. And it's quite radical is that for the past 2 years, he's bypassed a total clay court season, which is really, really taxing on your body.
Yeah.
And he's had 2 months out of the game where he's training and he's not wearing himself out.
Yeah.
That kind of all started because he looked at the bigger picture first.
Yeah.
What was the purpose for him to change the way he played so he could play longer?
Yeah. So let's just backtrack. That's a really interesting piece of strategy that you just said there, that because Roger was getting older, he couldn't play longer points. Mm-hmm. So he decided to change the game. And I think there's an interesting business metaphor there, is that if you are up against competition and you continue to play their game, but it's not your strength, then you're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah. And that's really, really important because what you've actually said is that each person has a personal strength. Unfortunately, what I see a lot in this industry is that everyone does the same thing.
Yeah.
And to me, that is, it's not common sense at all. When everyone is looking the same, everyone is sounding the same, are we all breeding clones over here? And then people say, I'm not being different. Well,
that's pretty hard, isn't it?
It's pretty hard if you're looking the same, saying the same things. What is differentiating you? And the problem is no one actually spends enough time to actually figure out what makes them special, what makes them different, what's their core story, what is it that makes them different. I mean, you're never going to get a player like Roger Federer again. But the goal of winning, the goal to a journey, the outcome can be taken on different ways, different pathways. But yet, we're all taught to go down this pathway. It's a bit like the schooling system. It's totally flawed as well. It doesn't actually understand the individual strengths and weaknesses of each person.
Yeah. So everyone in this industry talks about unique selling points, you know, what's your differentiator, what's different about you. If I was to say to you, Pancho, how do I go about finding out what my unique selling feature is mm-hmm. as an agent? How would you respond to that?
You actually need to sit down with someone that you can trust who's going to ask you a lot of brutal questions about you. And sometimes you might be uncomfortable with coming up with some of the answers, but during that questioning process, you're going to find out something that's unique about you that's going to make a big, big impact on your dialogue.
Yeah.
The way you communicate.
Yeah. So once I know what my strength is, mm-hmm. then I need to be able to figure out how to use that in my dialogue, in my marketing, in
everything.
My face, everything.
It pervades your whole life.
Right.
And it's not just something that you do, as I say it, you'll often find this going into other sectors of your life as well. It's not just work, but most people, what I would say, are quite divorced from their own personalities.
Yeah.
We don't actually totally understand themselves. That's probably some of the reasons why there is so much, what I'd say, discontent. You know, happiness is a very important part of enjoying what you do.
Mm.
And language is really, really important because it gives you a snapshot of how you actually construct your thoughts, how you communicate to yourself, which is really, really important, and importantly, how you communicate to other people. You know, people say, oh, it's hard work, it's hard work. Of course it's hard work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've spent 7 or 8 years in this industry. Primarily, this wasn't the main industry I was in, but I was actually quite astounded by some of the language used here.
Yeah.
And people were talking about ideal weeks. To me, that's a label that can set you up for either a great week or a poor week. It's just a week. There is no ideal week. And so the reality of life is that you have to do certain things. They either work or they don't. Stop creating a label for it because the label creates anxiety.
Yeah, okay. So what you're saying there is that if you have your ideal week planned out, let's say, and I'm using the ideal week in inverted commas, and then things don't go to plan, you're automatically going to think that an ideal week is crap. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What's your first response to that?
It's Mythbusters here today.
Yeah.
Okay. So interestingly, during Transform, and I just want to get your take on this because one of the things that came out early in the piece was you got the question of what's the best way to communicate with people via technology or face-to-face? Mm-hmm. And your answer was?
Whatever suits them.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. And there was a couple of the Transformers, I think, that found that very hard to get a hold of and to actually sort of think, well, you know, how does this person want to be communicated with as opposed to how they wanted to communicate with them?
That's right.
So what's your overall advice for agents who are trying to work out how they should, well, either A, communicate with their clients or B, change their ways of communication to suit the client and not themselves?
Okay.
And still be productive.
And still be productive.
I know, that's a tough question.
Can I use a metaphor for this instead?
Yeah, sure. Yeah?
My father's a retired plastic surgeon, and one day I was observing him with a patient, and he always used to say to me, you teach selling. He says, I don't do any selling here. And was it really, really interesting? He just diagnosed the patient. He asked that person questions. How long have you had this problem? What have you searched for? Is this a family problem or not? Hmm. And he just kept on asking questions, questions, questions. And the questions were very personal. Obviously, you would have them. But the key was asking questions that allowed you to understand where the client's perspective was. And I think a lot of questions in this industry are what I call statement-based questions. Before you prescribe a cure, diagnose what's going on. That means that you've got to sometimes ask clients questions more around the how than the what. You know, I hear this question used a lot, what's important to you? And I go, yeah, but you actually haven't learned the right to do that. If I was to put it into the doctor's perspective and say I'm looking to get, say, a nose job, what's important to you about getting a nose job? Well, I want to look good. He says, well, that doesn't actually answer what a doctor's looking for. He's more concerned about why do you want to do it? It says, well, you know, I had this issue, this issue, this issue. Okay. So we're now starting to find out the challenges from a personal perspective that the client has got. And I suppose it comes down to caring.
Yeah. We've heard this a few times now, is actually put yourself over with the person that you're dealing with and really almost be there with them rather than using the canned?
Yes, the canned one. I've seen it so many times, you know, when you have a salesperson that really truly cares about the client, the dialogue actually changes unconsciously.
Mm.
And they can say one word delivered totally differently to a canned approach, and the client gets it. Because there's something that happens on a very unconscious level in communication. We're hardwired as social animals to understand each other on a language level. And some people really, really get it, that they can communicate to a person and that person gets it. In fact, sometimes the dialogue is even shorter and the person totally connects with that person. Then you can have the dialogue delivered with the same words by someone else and that person's just lost. So I suppose it comes down to really understanding yourself, but I always come down to what are you trying to achieve for the client first?
Well, I think that's the problem, is a lot of agents will be thinking about the outcome that they want. And that's a natural thing. Like where, you know, like I'm sitting here talking to you and the outcome I want is a great podcast for my audience, right? So, you know, like we all think about what we want.
Mm-hmm. What does the audience want?
Yeah.
They probably want answers.
What do you want?
Yeah, what do you want? And I ask that question to a lot of people, and a lot of people struggle. If I had 20 people sitting in a class and I asked them, what do you actually want from this industry? I would say most of them go, oh, I want to make a lot of money. But when you delve deep, there's so much deeper things going on. And those deeper things, when you actually understand it, that deep dive, that affects your dialogue.
Yeah, absolutely. So say you're wanting to change something. So let's go back to change again for a moment. Yeah. So let's say that there's something that you want to change, whether it's your communication style, whether it's being less distracted in listing presentations, whether it's more customer focused and focus on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What are the factors that really affect successful change? Are they the same as it applies to life, business, family, et cetera, or are there different rules for different situations?
It's a good question. I would say the process is very, very similar, whether you want to change something in your life versus you want to change something in your career. It comes back to why. Why do you want to change? And I always force people to write out, when I do this kind of training, I get the people to write out around about 20 reasons why they want to change. And I leave
20.
20.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
When I do this as a public workshop, it's usually up to 35. And I come back in about 45 minutes and people are in agony trying to find out that. And what actually happens is that once they do, it's like the Red Sea has parted for them and everything has clarity in their life. And then that affects relationships, health, business, communication. Everything changes, but it's very rare that people will actually do that.
So that's number one, is to actually write down the reasons that you want to change, and a lot of them.
A lot of them, and don't stop at 10.
Yeah, and what's number two?
Number two is, okay, so when we look at change, there are three areas that you need to look at. You need to look at why you do things. So that examines your motivations and your emotions, and it justifies the reason for the change. Yeah. So this is an internal process that you have to go through. The second thing is you need to find out what do you do most of the time, your habitual actions. You actually need to sit down and think about how you habitually react to certain things. So this is, dare I say it, it's very, very therapeutic.
Yeah. So we're talking about obstacles here.
Yes.
So
I
have tried to lose weight a million times in my life.
Yeah.
And I know what obstacles are going to come my way.
Yeah.
So now I have to reflect on those and work out how I'm going to.
How you're going to come up with actions. So the third area is, what are you going to do those things, to fix it up? And I do recommend that you have someone on board and you develop a diary that actually logs your thoughts all the time. You start to examine it very rationally. But if you do want to make significant change, you have to change what you do.
That's interesting that you bring that up too, because let's call it journaling or keeping a diary or whatever it is. Is there a good or a bad label for that one? I can label it journaling.
Yeah.
I know Tim Ferriss talks about journaling a lot. Oprah's a big fan of journaling, Richard Branson, all the big guys.
Yeah.
So there must be a reason for that,
yeah,
obviously.
There's a very scientific reason around that. What actually happens is that when you tend to pick up things, if we look at how you do things, your body is hardwired for flight to fight. This is a very instinctual part of our psychology. So when you actually pick up a pen and you start to put your thoughts down on paper and you start to see that, there's a different type of response going on inside your head.
Mm.
And thereby you start to write certain things out. And then when you look at what you've actually written down, then you start to reflect on it and you go, is that what I really, really, really want? I'd be asking you a very upfront question and said, well, what you've just written, is it the truth?
Mm.
And says, if you were to sign on that, what's your signature actually worth? Would you bank on you doing that? And I said, I only want you to sign that if you're totally committed. And I have so many people just hesitate.
Yeah.
They won't commit their signature to paper.
We're back to change being hard.
Yes.
That's the brain getting in the way,
right? That's the brain getting in the way. But it's also your flight to fight syndrome kicking in.
Mm.
You prefer to run away from that being up front because you don't actually want to face that. So
at what point does it kick in? You know, I've often heard people say the expression, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret, which would you rather? At what point does that kick in?
I think the first is, it depends on how the hardwiring of the person is around, which is around motivation. Negative motivation tends to be around fear and pressure. I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do this.
Yeah.
And a powerful motivator is desire. I want to do this. I want to do this.
It's the carrot or the stick.
Yeah. And certain people, I always say they're hardwired differently. Their environment has created this. So their formative years with their parents have, in one way, had a great emphasis on their motivation strategy to learn.
Yeah.
So that hardwiring goes into our childhood. And a lot of people are very, very unaware of this hardwiring. That's one of the reasons why when they get rejection, they react very angry towards it.
Mm.
Because childhood, unfortunately, there's not many manuals teaching parents how to bring up their kids. And one of the problems is...
Well, no, they just hand you a baby.
That's it. Off you go.
Been there, done that. Been there.
Here you go.
See you later, Gator.
Yeah. And there's no development done of thinking. And so kids aren't taught how to think. And what you do is now is go 10 years into adulthood. Most people don't know how to think. They remember the past. They think remembering is thinking.
Yeah.
And they confuse that. That's the reason why most people hesitate about learning new things, because you have to think, and thinking is painful.
Mm.
But thinking brings up issues, and we don't want to face these issues because it's painful. And that's why there's very, very few people at the top who change. I mentioned to you, we're doing a podcast with a very interesting gentleman from New Zealand around why the New Zealand team wins. And
the All Blacks.
The All Blacks.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why they do, is because they see continual learning as a mantra. Now, how many people actually focus on learning new things all the time, changing the game? Everyone talks about in this industry, I've heard it so many times, changing the game, game changer, game changer, yeah. Game changer.
Yeah.
But all I see is the same game every week. It's like a replay. It's like Groundhog Day. And I'm going, well, how serious is that? And so the challenges that we have in this industry are a lot deeper than what people realize. And change is painful. And the key thing is you have to actually accept that. I've worked with many athletes and I've worked with many people privately. And these people actually enjoy the pain.
So accepting that change is painful.
Mm-hmm.
How can we tell ourselves it's worth it to push forward?
That's why it comes down to your greater purpose. That's why spending time going, if we go back to Roger Federer, his greater purpose was so he keep on playing for a longer period of time, maintain his body, maintain his strategies, and he practiced that for 6 months. He took time out of the game.
Yeah.
So it comes down to greater purpose. How well do we actually understand why we're in the game in the first place?
Mm. So if there's one or two things that you wanted agents to take away from this session today on change, mm-hmm. what would they be?
There are three things that affect habit change. And when we look at the environment, there's the situation where change is required, there's the process, and there's the circumstances. So you can look at everything very methodically that way. Okay, you go, where's the situation that is required change? So we look at the person who's heart attack.
Yeah.
Okay, so the situation is my health is going to kill me. the process, well, my attitudes and behaviors are required to change. So, you know, I need to do something about it.
Yeah.
I need to get a health plan. I need to stop. I need someone who's going to ring me up every day to remind me, don't have a smoke or stop smoking. And the circumstances are, what are the triggers that create that response? This is the moment I wake up, I have a coffee, and then I need a cigarette. You need to interrupt that.
Change the habit.
Change the habit. The habit's never going to go away. I've really, really, really seen bad habits actually go away.
Yeah, actually, my dad said that. My dad was a pack-a-day smoker for most of his life, and then all of a sudden he stopped. And he said, I didn't give up, I just stopped.
Mm-hmm. If you ever go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you'll often see people go, my name is Tom, I'm an alcoholic, and I haven't had a drink for 10 years. The reason why they do that is because they know the trigger is just waiting around the corner. It could be the smell of alcohol. It could be the smell of another smoke. They're totally aware of their triggers. And all you can do is push that bad habit down below so it doesn't rear its ugly little head. But be aware. That's what self-awareness does, is awareness and self-awareness are totally different things. Is self-awareness is you're starting to really trigger in. You know the situation. You know the emotion that's going to trigger on. And you go, I'm aware of that. So you go in just like a very high-performing athlete is totally aware what's going on in his body, and he can make change rapidly. So it's what they call the mind-body-emotional connection. Most people are too much in their heads.
Yeah, it's got to be a holistic thing.
Yeah.
So let's just recap.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not happy with where you are now, change is possible.
Yes.
And change is possible for everyone, no matter how young or old you are, because we've sort of talked about Roger Federer and he's
old for tennis, age.
He's old for tennis and he's still going. He's just changed the game.
Yes.
And lastly, it's self-awareness that's going to help you on your road to getting exactly what you want.
Yeah. I've always said, journalize your thoughts. Get a journal, write down your thoughts and have a look at it after one whole month. I had one person do it and he says, I would never give this journal to anyone.
Yeah.
He said, those thoughts are written down. I would not want people reading these thoughts.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'd want people reading mine either.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for your time today, Pancho. It's been lovely talking to you. And
Wonderful. Hopefully
we can welcome you back to talk about a few other these other mindset-y type things in the future.
Yeah, it would be lovely to do. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.